Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Once again today, we're talking about the importance of past performance. We explain a bit about how powerful past performance can be, both for government evaluations and for contractors who are trying to win new work. All right, let's get started. This week, we're returning to the topic of past performance, which we've talked about a lot, but there's a lot of little nuances that we're going to dig a little deeper into.
It's a big topic. I wrote an article for our Skyway community members about how, of the three basic elements of most competitive acquisitions, technical, price, and past performance can be a powerful one if you zoom out outside of the individual RFP.
Maybe because it's a required factor, past performance is often given the least importance of those basic elements, and it doesn't impact a lot of award decisions. We've spoken about that exact topic before, how past performance is kind of pushed aside, and very few decisions ever get made on the basis of past performance. It's treated like a pass-fail in a lot of them.
Yeah, it's kind of the last thing they throw in sometimes. We recently did an episode about how to apply past performance, how to use it and document it. In that one, we talked about how like price and past performance are not a sustainable competitive advantage. Competitors can always bid a lower price. Technical approaches, they can be copied. They can be reverse engineered. And honestly, they can just be outdated. So yeah. Technical and price just aren't going to be a competitive advantage.
You can game those pretty much. You can bring in a lot of experts to write a fancy proposal.
There you go. But past performance, it's tough to manufacture it. Like that's why it's an advantage. When it's used well, past performance can be the difference in winning and losing. If we zoom out and look at it outside of an individual RFP, it's the most valuable of the three.
Before we get into why it can be so valuable, let's stop and say thanks.
Thanks this week goes to Andrea McCafferty Brown from Bevilacqua Research Corporation. They're up in Huntsville, Alabama. I want to thank Andrea specifically for resharing our podcast episode. She didn't just like it. She actually wrote a note about why she liked the commercial T&M episode we created. The best way for people to find the information that we're giving away for free is for people like Andrea to share it on LinkedIn.
Thanks, Andrea. I think it's funny you said up in Huntsville, Alabama. I think of it as down in Huntsville, Alabama, but it doesn't matter. Huntsville is what we're talking about.
It's all relational. We got listeners all over the place.
All right, back to what we're really supposed to be talking about today, which is past performance. And like I said, when we started, it's a big topic. It is nearly always a factor in the award decision. It's a required factor most of the time. Can't say all of the time, but it is a required factor. Sometimes, though, it's not emphasized.
Let's start FAR time right out of the gate. FAR 15305A2, as well as Parts 9, Part 19, 8, 46, they all talk about past performance. For this one, we're going to focus on one small slice of the FAR, 15305A2. Even in that, there are a lot of topics. So instead of trying to cram it all into one, we're going to make a series about each one of the elements under FAR 15305A2.
All right. 15305 is, again, negotiated acquisitions. This is the competition stuff, how you do source selections. 15305 is the proposal evaluation section. As a reminder, 15305A tells you that the government can only evaluate the factors and subfactors that they told you they were going to evaluate in the solicitation.
That's one of the key elements of what's different about government contracts is they can't move the goalposts after they got proposals. Just one of those rules.
You can't wing it. You can't read a proposal and say, "Ooh, I really like that. I'm going to make that the most important thing that I care about." Doesn't work
exactly
that way.
Which you can do that in business to business, but not in business to government.
If you dig deeper into 15305A, you get to the subparagraphs you talked about, 15305A2, which is past performance evaluation. Here's where I'll start reading, 15A2, little I. Past performance information is one indicator of an offeror's ability to perform the contract successfully. The currency and relevance of the information, the source of the information, the context of the data, and general trends in contractor's performance shall be considered. This comparative assessment of past performance information is separate from the responsibility determination required under subpart 9.1.
which we actually have an episode about. That's episode 78.
Yeah. So it's not, are you responsible to do this job? It's, have you done this kind of work before? This paragraph lays it out pretty plainly. Past performance is one indicator of an offeror's ability to perform the contract successfully. Just because they've done this before doesn't mean that they'll do well on your contract.
The purpose of the RFP is to explain the degree that the government will evaluate that past performance in that individual RFP. And as I mentioned before, the other two indicators are usually price and technical.
Right. The government gives you what's most important. It should say in an RFP right up front, it should say technical is more important than price, which is more important than past performance, or past performance is more important than technical or price, or whatever. But it should be laid out like that. They might not tell you how much more important, but sometimes they even get into
slightly more, and when combined, they are significantly more, and
exactly.
Pie by pie, and yeah, you can get real creative with those.
So we're going to consider past performance. I'm going to dig through the individual words in the paragraph because it tells you what factors the government can consider. I'm sure there's more, but it gives you some hints here. First is the currency and relevance of the information.
Is that 3 years? Is it 5 years? Is it experience with our individual agency? We had one where the contractor's experience actually testing this particular type of equipment. That was the part we cared about. And of course, it had to be within the last 5 years. So that's a niche. You niched it down to specifically what they have experience doing.
Farr also says the source of the information should be considered.
In other words, did you put it on your website yourself? In which case, it may not have a lot of credibility. Did other customers say it about you, which is why testimonials are so good? Did other government customers, like is it referenced in a CPARS or something like that? Or is it just on Wikipedia, which, you know, anybody can edit? So they consider the source of the information, how valuable is it based on that?
Context is also important.
Yeah. Have they done this for us? I had an RFP once where the offeror said, hey, we can do this. When you looked at their background, it wasn't really the same thing. It was professional services, which is, you know, that's a wide open area. But they hadn't really done what we were looking for. And because it was management, they're like, oh, I can manage that. I'm like, well, can you? So the context of managing it for our agency with our urgencies, with our mission, wasn't the same thing. Understanding the context of what they'd done in terms of what our customer wanted, that's a different thing entirely.
And 15305A2 goes on to say, general trends in contractors' performance shall be considered. You know, just because they did it once doesn't necessarily mean that they always do it that well. Or maybe they're getting better. Maybe they're getting worse.
And things like their CPARS rating is getting better, or are they getting worse? I think Shelley talked about that when she was on the podcast, about if your first year is great and then you get a little worse over the 4 years that you get your CPARS, that's a bad trend.
Yeah.
Or if a bad, but you get better. Like those are trends that are actually visible by the government.
Yeah, we have 5 CPARS. One of them says good, so that's the one we're going to look at.
There you go. We're going to ignore the last 4 years.
Right. And like we said before, past performance is different from being determined responsible. The responsibility determination is a different thing.
Yeah, that responsibility determination, it's binary. It's can you do this work for the government? Actually, can you do work for the government, period? It's a different lens. It's much more general.
Before we go any farther, let's talk about where this occurs in the acquisition process, in the acquisition time zones and the execution time zones. Past performance comes up when the government is doing their market research. Are there companies out there that have done this type of thing before? How have they done it? How much relevance, how much importance should we put on past performance in this source selection decision? It also matters in the RFP zone when that final RFP is released, because contractors have to respond with the past performance data that's been requested by the RFP. And you can't make that up at the last minute. You kind of have to have that before the RFP comes out. In the source selection zone, the government is actually doing their evaluation based on what they asked for and what the contractor submitted.
Then, of course, during the execution time zones, the performance of the contract is when you're documenting this, when the contractor is documenting this past performance. It's really hard to pull it out of thin air 3 years later when you're getting ready for the RFP. The better strategy is to actually document it throughout the execution of the contract. And the performance zone is the best place to do that.
Yeah, more sophisticated contractors actually have a past performance library where as contracts are going on, they're documenting things. They're doing past performance write-ups. They have sample languages so that if it's a big company in other parts of the company, if they want to leverage that past performance, but the proposal writers weren't actually a part of that performance, there's a library of well-written, I'll say, past performance documentation that they can just pull from and use that language in their proposal response.
And honestly, I would argue it doesn't even have to be well-written. Start with it being written down, period.
That's a big leap from nothing, for sure.
Yeah, for small companies, a lot of times they think, well, I don't have to have this yet. Oh, if you do, you're way ahead of your competitors.
Yep. Let's get specific on the government side, why the government cares about this, and use a couple of examples.
The government wants to know that they're going to hire somebody who knows what they're doing. I mean, don't we all? Whenever we hire somebody, we want to know. If I hire someone to, we'll go back to your building a deck, right? You're not going to hire somebody who's never done it before. Would you rate them the same if they had no experience? Which, by the way, there's a part of the FAR that talks about that possibility, which we'll get to that one later in this series. But really, you want somebody who has experience.
And that experience goes back to the things we talked about a minute ago. Have they ever built a deck? Maybe that's important, but what if they built a deck 20 years ago? Does that count? That's not very recent. What if they say, I built a 5 foot by 10 foot deck, more of a patio really, but it's on the ground level, but it's, you know, 6 inches up. So it's a deck. How about that? Does that count? Well, if that's close to your requirement, it counts. But if your requirement is for like
mega deck,
20,000 square feet of deck on three levels with a hot tub and a fireplace built in,
a tire swing.
Yeah. Then that 5x10 deck, it isn't really relevant to what you're asking them to do. What if I built 20 great decks, but the last four have been terrible? Maybe I lost a couple of the key builders, or maybe my main supplier went out of business and now I'm using inferior materials from somewhere else. This is where the trend thing, this is where watching what's happened over time matters, because you might have been a great deck builder once, but you're not anymore. The government needs to be savvy about how they look at that data and what they ask for, what kind of data they ask for, so they don't just get the CPARs or past performance questionnaires from the customers that got the 20 great decks.
Yeah, you want to talk to the four people who didn't get good decks.
You want to talk to all of them, or a representative sample of all of them. That's a better way to say it.
As a contracting officer, I wanted evidence of the stuff that I was competing. I had one where it was professional services, and we needed people, I personally needed people on this service contract to help manage our contract writing system. So the offeror said, we've hired contract managers before. But they didn't understand the context of the requirement was, I need them to be able to manage our contract writing system. It's a specialized skill. So they were missing context. I also had one for specialized training. And being able to deliver the specialized training on site was something that we needed to have some evidence of past performance. Had they actually done this type of special training before? And there were lots of promises. Oh, yeah, we could do it in that weather. We can do it at that elevation. But have you? And am I going to kick them out because they've never done it before? Not necessarily, but man, they better have a really good explanation. And their whole idea of, well, we've done training, it's not good enough. And to make it more personal, we're actually upgrading the Skyway site. And we're going through this exercise, but it's a membership site, right? And we didn't start out as a membership company, although we've been for the last 5 years. So now it's a matter of, we're hiring somebody to redo our site, and we want past performance from somebody who has done membership sites. Turns out they're very different. It's not just a matter of, you know, put up a billboard and put out content. There's a backside that needs to be managed properly. So we're looking for somebody who has that contextual, recent, relevant past performance. So this shows up everywhere, this concept of 15305A2 little I.
Yeah, recent, relevant, watch the trends, all of that matters. Just because someone built a website 5 years ago does not mean they can build a website now. The technology's changed. Just the general way that websites look now has changed. Let's circle around to the industry side. We've talked in previous episodes about how past performance is a bridge to the next opportunity. But it's not always a bridge to the next opportunity if the customer doesn't think that your past performance is important.
Past performance is critically important. If we target, it's critically valuable if we target. if we don't target, then again, you're going to come up as a commodity, because then people will shop on price because they don't see the difference between your past performance and not, right? They're not likely to value your past performance if we're not shaping the opportunity to make sure that we're targeting our past performance to what they actually are asking for. In other words, our past performance is a lockout that actually is an area of interest for the government customer. We talked about the lockout in episode 244. To use the building a deck analogy, let's say that Joe is Joe's house of decks, right? He builds decks, but he uses recycled plastic, you know, this simulated wood. They don't need to be stained. They never warp and they don't splinter. So it's a better solution, right? It actually is a lockout for him, for Joe's house of decks, because he has an exclusive deal with the recycled board company, the manufacturer that makes this stuff. So that's his lockout.
And if you didn't listen to the lockout episode yet, episode 244, a lockout is something that you're so good at and no one else has that you've locked them out of this competition. You've locked them out of winning it. You got it locked up is another way to say it.
Exactly.
So go on with Joe's simulated wood decks.
The lockout's only valuable if the customer cares about it. So in this case, if the buyer doesn't really have any experience with decks and they don't understand that it's a mess to stain a deck, having boards warp is a pain because you have to kind of constantly replace them. And he says, oh, it'll be in the sun and the sun will dry them out. Actually, the sun can warp them more. And he doesn't have any kids, so he isn't worried about splintering, right? Because if you have young kids, the first thing you think of with wooden decks is, oh crap, they're gonna go out there barefoot and get a splinter.
Kids, I care about my feet.
Well, yeah, exactly. There you go. Because you're a barefooter.
It's not just a kid problem. Everybody gets splinters.
Fair enough.
But the point is, a buyer that doesn't have experience with decks doesn't really care about Joe's lockout. So Joe's past performance of building these simulated decks that don't need to be stained or warp and don't splinter, they're very low maintenance, it's not seen as relevant or valuable to this buyer. Joe has tons of past performance building simulated wood decks, but he needs to convince the buyer before that RFP is released that the benefits of his solution, this low maintenance, no stain, no warp, no splinters to hurt your kids' feet. he needs to convince the buyer that those are the most important factors.
And we'll bring this back to GovCon. I was doing a red team review for one of our members' proposals. And it was obvious to me that they knew how to do the work. They knew this customer. Their past performance was very specific to what the requirement asked for. In other words, you know, the simulated wood, it's like they were asking for simulated wood, and this is what our customer made. It was a niche requirement, which meant that their past performance, because it fit that niche, was more valuable. It wasn't valuable enough to be a lockout, I don't think, but it was pretty close. That past performance was valuable because they were highly targeted.
The more niche your product or service is, the harder it is for other companies to get past performance if the government has specifically valued your niche over other solutions. And that's the trick.
And that's why you have to target. If you broad spread your past performance, it's not as valuable.
Targeting is the first part. Finding agencies, finding buying activities that already value your solution, that get it, is one thing. The second half is shaping, convincing others, the other agencies that don't already value your solution, that your solution is the only way to go. That's what they want to buy. And then they write the RFP that favors you over your competitors.
Because it's a better solution. Simulated wood is a better solution. It's a lower maintenance, etc. So this isn't tricking somebody into buying a crappier product. It's getting the government to understand this is the right product to buy.
Yeah. But I'm going to argue with you there.
Okay.
You're saying it's a better solution, as if that's the only answer. I would argue that for plenty of buyers, simulated wood is not the best solution. I don't know who those buyers are. I'm just saying there are plenty of people out there that will say, I cannot have simulated wood in this situation.
Yeah, they could be allergic to it. They could like the smell of actual wood. Maybe they like staining. I'm not one of those people.
Maybe they like carpenter bees eating it up all the time. Who knows?
Maybe they like splinters.
Before we start arguing about the types of buyers that might like splinters, let's wrap this one up.
On the government side, let the contractors build on their past performance. If the RFP does not allow them to use their advantage of past performance, in other words, it's an LPTA, it's lowest price, you're basically ignoring their past performance, and they're likely to opt out and not even tell you. That's not something that I thought of as a contracting officer. When I focused on, when I said things like price is the most important element, or I said technical and price combined are significantly more important than past performance, well, then somebody who's been doing this for a long stinking time and does it well, they're not going to bid, because I just told them that their strength isn't going to be rated highly.
Yeah, the opposing view for prioritizing past performance is that prioritizing it can lead to a couple different things.
Over-prioritizing it, maybe.
Yeah, over-prioritizing. That's a good way to say it. First, you could get pre-request for proposal complications from companies that are going to argue with the selection criteria you've chosen. If you're doing the right thing and releasing draft RPs and RFIs that talk about how you're going to select a winner here, you may get arguments that your selection criteria are overly biased in favor of the incumbent or a specific company. Joe's Decks, who has the lockout on simulated wood products, all the companies that build wood decks are going to argue with you, going to raise a little bit of a stink that you're being so specific. Our deck will solve these problems. And then it gets down to, what is the real requirement?
And the critical piece there is, what is the real requirement? The requirement is, we need a deck that's not going to splinter. We need a deck that's going to be low maintenance. Maybe simulated wood isn't the solution to that, but your past performance of how well you've done what you're submitting to the government is critically important.
Yeah, someone may come in and say, I'm going to give you a steel deck that is low maintenance and doesn't give you splinters. That might also satisfy the requirement, but it might drive it out of your price range, might have other problems.
Be really hot to walk on barefoot.
The point is, you want to talk about these things with contractors ahead of time to make sure that you're getting all of the options available, so that your requirements aren't ruling out the best solution to meet your mission. Another argument for why over-prioritizing past performance can lead to problems is, you could end up with a general lack of innovation if you're ruling out past performance with any new techniques or ideas. When we're talking about Joe building the deck and talking about shaping the requirement, it's not just shaping the requirement to your technical abilities, it's shaping the requirement to the things that you've done before, like successfully built and installed low maintenance, splinter-free decks. If your source selection criteria are too specific about what that past performance needs to be about, you could really stifle innovation. People that make something else that meets your technical requirements and is in your price range may not be able to bid because they don't have past performance doing exactly what you talked about. It gets beyond the requirement and gets to really, it is, it's favoring a specific company or a specific industry over others rather than just focusing on the requirement.
Or just favoring the old way we did it. You and Dan Finkenstadt talked about the idea that the standard of professional services, you have to have like a PhD, whatever, you have to have some kind of master's degree. And then people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos wouldn't fit that requirement. Well, those are really innovative dudes. You might want their brains on the part to come to the party. But if the past performance is, you have to have done this way, well, that don't totally block out all the other opportunities, yeah. Which is why it's one of the three critical pieces: past performance, price, and technical. It's not the only one, but I would argue it's under prioritized. And that's the point of this.
Yeah, and that leads me right to some final thoughts on the industry side. We talked about how targeting and shaping lets you build on your past performance. If you can convince the government that what you do, your techniques, your solution is important, and get them to build that in, you have a better chance to win.
If the RFP undervalues past performance on something that you were considering bidding, you may choose to opt out and honestly tell the government that you're doing it and why. Because otherwise, I had no idea that people were opting out of our RFPs because I was undervaluing their lockout or their strength, put it that way. Yeah. So it's not so binary.
Yeah, you don't really want it to be a lockout. You don't want to be, hey, I'm going to only buy from the monopoly here. But
yeah, as a government contracting officer, I cringe at the term lockout, but right. I put on my industry brain and I'm like, yeah,
that's actually what you want. Yeah. You want to drive it to the lockout. But on the government side, you want the best solution for your mission that can be delivered on time and on cost, right? So if you're inadvertently ruling people out because of the way that you've written past performance, either too broad, or too narrow.
It's the Goldilocks past performance episode.
Right. If you're doing that, then you could be actually limiting your mission success. And our mission is to end this thing in 20 minutes, which I don't think we did this week.
Mission failure.
We're gonna end it here. So at least we can get closer to being successful on our mission. I'll talk to you later.
All right. See you, Paul.
Okay. That's it for this episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed the podcast, we invite you to check out the Skyway community at skywaymember.com. The Skyway community is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of starting, growing, and running a business with government contracts. We speak GovCon. Whether you're brand new to GovCon, just got your first contract, or you're already a successful government contractor, being a Skyway community member gives you the edge. To learn more, call us at 877-884-5280 or check us out at skywaymember.com. Thank you again for being a listener, and we'll see you next week.